The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone. Welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Lots to get to on today's program. As I mentioned on yesterday's show, we'll be going through some of the highlights from the Munich Security Conference. Richard Palmer wrote about that last night in his Trumpet Brief, summarized a few of the key points there. So we'll look into that in some greater depth here in just a moment. Also, we'll continue with some of our study of Winston Churchill and the warning that he sounded, in particular during those wilderness years, the 1930s, lots of parallels with what we see happening in the world today. And also at the end of the show, we'll you've probably seen some highlights or clips of this incredible story from the Winter Olympics. Esther Ledecka, I think is her name, from the Czech Republic. She won the Super G skiing competition just the other day, and quite a few stories about her background and just how incredible this victory was. She kind of came out of nowhere. In fact, Jonathan, maybe you can give them just a little foretaste of this incredible call. I think it's clip 19, just a little bit of it.
Where is she on the clock now? Oh, she's got the green line. This would be a story. And then she gets touched for the line. 121.12. What another recovery from the youngster. Oh, she's taken the gold. She's taken gold.
There you go. We'll whet your appetite for later on in the program. As I say, we'll get into few of these other things a little bit later. Well, as far as just a general theme to this this Munich Security Conference, and as I say, Richard touched on this last night in his brief, but basically we're in a dangerous world. That's not a surprise to any of you listening to this program. It is, however, sobering to just hear so many world leaders and diplomats stepping up to the mic or speaking during these panel discussions, talking about just how we've crossed a threshold again with all of these nuclear threats, like from North Korea and Iran and so on. The organizer to this conference, by the way, Wolfgang Ischinger, he said that the warning signs, they're flashing in bright red, according to Radio Free Europe, just commenting on this security conference. It says here, the dangers of nuclear proliferation and talk of dire global security dominated the opening of a high-profile security conference featuring world leaders and other top officials. This hasn't really gotten much coverage in the United States, which is just caught up strictly on, you know, whatever the political story of the day is. And right now it continues to be gun control. But here are all these world leaders gathered in Munich, high-profile leaders, talking about the dire state of global security. Radio Free Europe says the battered relations between Russia and the West, as well as the ongoing war in eastern Ukraine, are also at the forefront of the annual Munich Security Conference that kicked off February 16th, so last Friday, I guess it was, a three-day conference. It refers to the chairman, Wolfgang Ischinger, opened the event by... Well, he discussed this dire reality that we're facing. Let me just play you a clip from Mr. Ischinger. This is the organizer of the Munich Security Conference. Here's clip 5.
I've been asked, is the situation really that bad? A few days ago, famous Harvard professor Steven Pinker wrote in the Wall Street Journal, and I quote, "You can always fool yourself into seeing a decline if you compare rose-tinted images of the past with bleeding headlines of the present." Does he have a point? Yes and no. Yes, it's true. the world has made remarkable progress. Improvements in fighting poverty and disease. Many more people are able to live a life in dignity today than maybe 20 or 40 years ago. But then again, democracy and freedom, the values we here in the West value most, are in decline, are under threat. The West, our societies, appear to be weaker than in the past. The international order itself, established in the post-World War period, is at risk. The number of refugees and IDPs, ladies and gentlemen, is simply appalling. So I think the truth is progress, even significant progress, and danger and significant risk can spread at the same time. They are not mutually exclusive. This is why we should not simply spread doom and gloom. I agree with those who argue that point. But it would also be foolish to downplay the warning signs. My friends, the warning signs are flashing in bright red. As a result of these types of considerations, my team and I decided to choose as our conference motto, "To the brink and back?" And we thought about the question mark for a long time. The world, I think, has moved closer, much too close, to the brink of major interstate conflict.
Those are some comments there from the Munich Security Conference organizer, Wolfgang Ischinger, who talked about the world getting much, much too close to interstate conflict. He commented on some of those who say, look, and this would be John Kerry or former Vice President Biden, even President Obama, all the comments he made during his presidency about how that the world might get a little bit messy here and there. But for the most part, we're in the midst of this age of tranquility. That's the way the Obama administration saw it. And really, the reason I wanted to play that lengthy quote there is he's talking about the paradox that Herbert Armstrong spoke about all the time when he looked at this world. He said, on the one hand, you see these astonishing developments, all of this progress, all of this technology. And yet right along with it, you see these appalling evils, and the evil is spreading. The kinds of things that we see now, thanks to social media and other technologies, just vile hatred that used to be confined to someone's dwelling place or to wherever they worked. Now they get on a rant and put it on Facebook or Twitter for the whole world to see, and it circulates. What a paradox. He brings out the fact that there have been advances in medicine or in fighting poverty, disease. But look at democracy and freedom. It's in decline. They're under threat. What did he say there? We'd be foolish to downplay the warning signs. Those signs are flashing in bright red, as he said. He went on to say a little bit later that the nuclear threat right now is the first time we've faced this kind of threat since the end of the Cold War. I mean, a real existential threat of nuclear conflict. Notice what I believe this is the NATO Secretary General. This is what he had to say, a shorter clip here, clip 6.
Then before I close, let me say a few words about the reemergence of nuclear challenges. For many years, the nuclear threat receded from view. Unfortunately, it is back on our agenda. And it would be irresponsible to ignore it.
So some similar remarks as the conference organizer. Now, these world leaders, they don't see where the real danger lies in so many cases. They do see the nukes, the proliferation of nuclear weapons, something like 16,000 of them around the world. And they do see the occasional madman. But they look at themselves. They look at the Western democracies and think that, well, surely, we could never be the one to trigger that kind of a conflict. It could only be North Korea. Or maybe there's a few that think it could be Iran. Or perhaps Russia. What does your Bible say, though, about this dangerous world? God says, watch Jerusalem. God says, watch Europe. God says, watch the heart of Europe. God says to watch Germany. And so you see a lot of the statements at this conference, another theme that played out over and again, is the United States being in retreat. This divide that we see emerging between the U.S. And Europe. Quite a few world leaders and diplomats commented on it. Some lamented it. Some took it as incentive for Europe to build up its own strength, to build up its own military. Sebastian Kurz, he's the new Austrian chancellor, he talked about America's retreat from the world stage. I think this next clip here has, it has him speaking in German, and then it has the translator. Here's clip 7.
The United States have an economic power that is stronger than ever before, but they are retreating from the world stage. China has been filling this vacuum in political terms and in economic terms. Another thing has changed. In the past, it often appeared that big fish eat small fish, but nowadays the impression is that fast fish eat slow fish.
So that's Sebastian Kurz, or his translator, talking about America in retreat and China rushing to fill that vacuum and how the world is different today with these smaller actors causing more trouble because they can move quick or they can move within the shadows. NATO officials chimed in, criticizing the President of the United States, saying that the European Union, this army that Europe wants, it's a good thing. There were a few dissenting voices. But we know where this is leading. The Bible tells us. Berlin Policy Journal, it says this, the symbolism of the French and German defense ministers opening the conference was no accident. Last year, it was the American and German heads of defense, after all. Now, this year, it's Germany and France. It's not America and Germany. It's not the NATO alliance leading the way. This year, it's the European Union. America, remember, is in retreat. And so you have the German and you have the French diplomats or defense ministers speaking up, waving the banner for this European army. Berlin Policy Journal, it says, but the German defense minister, while thanking U.S. Defense Secretary Jim Mattis for America's partnership and the strength of the transatlantic alliance, sent a shot across the bow as well, saying, we observe with great concern that some of our partners are systematically cutting back funding for diplomacy. So again, a veiled shot at the United States, right across the bow, as it says there. Further on, it says, Parly, I think that's the French minister, praise the Franco-German lockstep on defense, values, and vision for the future. She made an urgent appeal for the need to wake up and defend Europe at home, adding that Europe is not a luxury. It is a must. Europe has to get stronger. Europe needs to build an army. The German defense minister, Ursula von der Leyen, she set the tone for the event. saying that we've paved the way to establish an army of Europeans. Is that what the world needs? Is this what we need to bring peace to the world? In the United States, at least at the local level, they're talking about getting rid of weapons, getting some kind of control on guns and weapons. But in looking at it internationally, what is the world calling for? More weapons, more armies, more instruments of war. An army of Europeans? What happens historically? Just looking into the history books, what happens when we have armies of Europeans? We don't even have to go that far back into the history books to see what happens, particularly when they're rallying around a strong man, whether it's Hitler or Napoleon. An army of Europeans, what a statement. Here's a bit from Ursula von der Leyen, the German defense minister, clip 8.
We have made a start. In December last year, we launched the European Defense Union, at last. So, in a way, we have embarked on a political journey. We intend to work on an army of Europeans. We have the European Defense Fund that is providing significant boost in this respect.
That's Ursula von der Leyen saying that we've established, or at least we've paved the way politically to establish this army of Europeans. She went on to say this. This is clip 9.
In view of global challenges such as terrorism, poverty, and climate change, Europe must now begin to finally build up momentum. Those who are willing must be able to move ahead without being blocked by individual nations. We have already managed to do this with the launch of PESCO. That's a huge step in the area of defense. When it comes to European foreign policy, we're not yet there yet. When it comes to making controversial decisions, we are always hampered by the need for unanimity. But, ladies and gentlemen, I believe we really need something like PESCO in foreign policy as well.
It sounds nice and sweet with the female translator, but that's basically the German defense minister saying that we can't let dissenting voices or nations slow us down. We've got PESCO in place. That's the oncoming European army. And now we need unanimity, as she said there, in foreign policy as well. You add to this, well, there were statements by Poland's prime minister saying that Europe needed more steel tanks. We need more armaments. We need more instruments of war. The Polish prime minister, he said that we've made more progress in European defense policy over the last year than in the last 20 years. Just jumping ahead here to the Polish prime minister's statements. Here's clip 11.
Stronger Europe for me means better defense sector, better cooperation in the context of the defense sector, and better border protection. In this conference, I think 11 years ago, President Putin made his famous speech marking new era in the relationship between Russia and Europe. And actually, he delivered what he promised. And 1 year later, there was an attack on Georgia. A couple of years later, there was an attack on Ukraine. And I think we should bear this in mind while thinking about security in Europe, because this Russian question is no longer a CEE question. It's a question for the whole of NATO and the whole of the European Union. I feel very much pro-European. I would like that we live under Pax Europea. But this is not the case. This was not the case for 70 years, and this is still not the case today. So if we want to be more self-reliant, self-sufficient, we really have to cope, we really have to cater for our own security much, much better, in a much better way. Today, 70-75% of all the military power is actually relying on the U.S.
That's the Polish Prime Minister. Again, some interesting comments there. He feels very strongly pro-European. He'd like to live under Pax Europea. We've had Pax Britannica, Pax Americana, and now Pax European, Pax Europa. We've got to be self-sufficient. We've got to build up our own security. And then it was the European Commission president. He's the one that talked about how much progress they've made on defense in the last year. I got that confused with the Polish prime minister. But here's clip 10. This is Jean-Claude Juncker with a translator.
Over the past few years, we have made more progress than in the 20 years before that. We have undertaken countless efforts. And good morning, Mr. Prime Minister, by the way. So during the last decades, there have been many efforts geared towards that, but there had not been any considerable progress. But now there is progress, and these advances are necessary, and the numbers speak for themselves.
Now there is progress, more in the last year than there has been in the previous 20. And what's astounding in all of this, and again, this is not new to so many of you listening to this program, is that the United States is urging them on. I talked about this right when President Trump came into office, America first, telling the European nations or the member states in the NATO alliance, you've got to pay your fair share. You've got to contribute to the defense. You've got to look after yourself. We're going to stop paying the way for the EU, for NATO defense, or for the United Nations. And like I say, there's barely veiled threats, or not threats, I guess, criticisms aimed at the United States, even at this conference. But still, when you hear those kinds of statements, and then you have these U.S. officials, like with Senator Lindsey Graham, he was at the conference over the weekend as well, talking about how that, look, we want to see Europe build up its defense. We want to see an army of Europeans. We're fine with a Pax Europea civilization. This is Senator Lindsey Graham. He's from South Carolina. This is what he had to say over the weekend, clip 12.
I've always been reluctant to support a European Defense Force because I think it would take away from NATO. I don't believe that anymore. But the main thing for me is I am appreciative of any effort that would make our European allies think as a group. Every country is proud of itself. Every state in America is proud of itself, but we're better together. I've always been leery of a European defense initiative until now. I think it actually may be the antidote to this nationalist fever, where we begin to think about our commonality and our threats, but how we deal with the threats and make NATO more effective.
The world is changing and opinions are changing. He was always against it. That's interesting. Pro-NATO. Let the United States take the lead. I'm against an EU defense force, but I don't think that way anymore. In fact, now I think a common European defense force will move things ahead, will move things forward. Real Clear Defense, it has this to say about the conference and the push for a European security, or a common European security and defense. It says ambitions of a European military have grown significantly in recent years. The decision to establish a European Union defense pact, known as a permanent structured cooperation on security and defense, that's the PESCO acronym you keep hearing, at the end of the previous year became a clear indicator of this trend. It is the first real attempt to form the EU independent defense without reliance on NATO. This is the first real attempt to do it without relying on NATO, which also means without relying on the United States. These are some of the themes, as I say, that emerged at the Munich Security Conference over the weekend. When we come back, we'll also look at some of the comments that Israel's prime minister made, a refreshing speech in many ways, as Mr. Netanyahu took to the podium and gave the unvarnished truth, at least with respect to Iran. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, you can send comments to td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Herbert W. Armstrong described Germany's devastating destruction in 1944 and 1945 as one of the worst beatings ever administered to any nation. Western leaders from both sides of the Atlantic assured our peoples that a demoralized Germany would never again be able to disturb the peace of the world. But while Washington and London were promising that German militarism would never again be able to strike, Herbert Armstrong was warning the world of one final resurrection of a German-led Holy Roman Empire. Only a very few listened. Mr. Armstrong said German industry and the German people's willpower and determination to work, produce, and organize was the very heart and lifeblood of all Europe.
The nations of Europe want to unite. They just don't know how to do it.
He said the prostrate body of Europe could not come back without the leadership of a revived and vigorous Germany.
And the economic and the military body that is to rise up and to restore the Roman Empire, the thing that we least suspect here in the United States, it cannot rise up without its heart. And its heart is in Germany.
The world is witnessing history repeat itself one more time. Request Germany and the Holy Roman Empire for more on this important subject. Don't forget to visit our website at thetrumpet.com. Every day, thetrumpet.com will help you understand your world by analyzing today's headlines under the clear light of Bible prophecy. Log on to thetrumpet.com and sign up for our daily Trumpet Brief email and subscribe to The Trumpet Magazine. The Trumpet Daily.
So Richard suggested we just play all of Prime Minister Netanyahu's speech. It was that enjoyable. I think it was only 10 or 12 minutes in length. We won't play the whole thing here for you, just a couple of highlights. You can probably get to the full speech somewhere online. In any event, here he is talking about the threat, Iran in particular. Clip 13.
The commander of the Revolutionary Guard, Ali Jafri, said, "We're on the path to the rule of Islam worldwide." That means right here, too. "This is, in my judgment, the greatest threat to our world, not just to Israel, not just to our Arab neighbors, not just to Muslims far and wide, but to you as well. Because once armed with nuclear weapons, Iran's aggression will be unchecked, and it will encompass the entire world. Look at what they're doing now, before they have nuclear weapons. Imagine what they'll do later, if, God forbid, they'll have them. Just as was true 80 years ago, an agreement that was seen as appeasement has only emboldened the regime and brought war closer. The nuclear agreement with Iran has brought the countdown, has begun the countdown to an Iranian nuclear arsenal in little more than a decade. And the sanction relief that the deal provided has not moderated Iran. It's not made them more moderate internally, and it's not made them more moderate externally. In fact, it's unleashed a dangerous Iranian tiger in our region and beyond. Through its proxies, Shiite militias in Iraq, the Houthis in Yemen, Hezbollah in Lebanon, Hamas in Gaza, Iran is devouring huge swaths of the Middle East.
That's a little bit of truth coming from the Israeli leader at the Munich Security Conference, talking about how this is a grave threat not just to Israel and Israel's Arab neighbors. It's a threat to Europe as well. And what does Daniel 11 and verse 40 say about the push? Just the constant push. Here they're on the march through their proxies, as he said, with the militias in Iraq, the Houthis in Yemen, Hezbollah over in Lebanon, Hamas in Gaza, and they're just devouring huge swaths of territory in the Middle East. And they're coming for Europe. And he talks about the history leading up to World War II. Appeasement didn't work then. It's only making Iran stronger. It's emboldening the regime. And Netanyahu said, look, you don't, I mean, nowhere are those ambitions of the mullahs clearer than in Syria. They're building this land bridge through Iraq and Syria and Lebanon, all the way through to the Mediterranean Sea. He's calling out Iran and Iran's foreign minister, who Javid Zarif, who also happened to be in attendance at this conference. And there's the Israeli prime minister calling him out. Here's what he had to say as well, clip 14.
Later today you will hear from Mr. Zarif. He's the smooth-talking mouthpiece of Iran's regime. I give Mr. Zarif credit. He lies with eloquence. Last year at this conference, Zarif said that, I'm quoting, extremism is driven by lack of hope and respect. Well, if that's true, why does the Iranian regime deny its people hope and respect by jailing journalists and activists? Zarif said it was erroneous to label Iran radical. If that's true, what do you call a regime that hangs gays from cranes in town squares? Zarif said that conflicts in Syria and Yemen do not have military solution. If that's true, why does Iran send fighters and arms to fuel violence precisely in those places? No doubt Mr. Zarif will brazenly deny Iran's nefarious involvement in Syria.
In fact, Zarif spoke later in the afternoon. I don't have the clips, but he talked about the success of the operations in Syria. Well, they've stamped out ISIS, you see. But look at Iran spreading its power and influence. By the way, he called Netanyahu's speech, or some of those statements, he referred to it as a cartoonish circus. Zarif did. But what's the truth? Who's lying? Who's telling the truth and who's lying? Who's telling the truth and defending itself against an attack in the case of the drone strike last week? Who's defending itself, and who's on the march? Expanding its power and influence all across the region. He lies with eloquence. That's quite a statement. Right in front of the minister there in the audience. Just as far as that drone attack from a week ago, listen to what Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said at the security conference. This is clip 15.
Iran also denies that it committed an act of aggression against Israel last week, that it sent a drone into our airspace to threaten our people. Well, here's a piece of that Iranian drone, or what's left of it after we shot it down. I brought it here so you can see it for yourself. Mr. Zarif, do you recognize this? You should. It's yours. You can take back with you a message to the tyrants of Tehran. Do not test Israel's resolve. And I have a message for everyone gathered here today, too. I want you to support the people of Iran. I want you to support those in the region who want peace by confronting an Iranian regime that threatens peace.
That's a classic Netanyahu, actually bringing a piece of the drone that they shot down last Saturday and waving it in front of the Iranian foreign minister. Do you recognize this? You should. It's yours. It's yours. We shot it down. This is happening. This is real. These weapons are being used. Who's the cartoonish circus, or who's heading it up? And who's telling the truth? Look at how many people are just so quick to consume lies. Smooth-talking lies, just like it says over in Isaiah 30. Liars can come along and lie with eloquence. Leaders, on the other hand, tell the truth. This is from Manchester's book on Churchill. I think he's actually quoting Churchill here, who said, even though the rank and file refuse to face facts, the leader has to look at them and has to warn the people. The leader has to look at facts and warn the people. It says further, it was the supreme duty of a political figure to tell the people of the country the truth, because truth is greater than tactics. See, most people aren't, they're not going to face the truth. They're not going to face their national fears. And so it takes a strong leader to bring clarity and truth to the conference, in this case. A little bit of a Churchillian spirit at the Munich Security Conference, thanks to Prime Minister Netanyahu. We'll take a break and I'll play one more clip from Mr. Netanyahu's speech. But I wanted to conclude just to tie this back in with what we discussed yesterday about Russia and its meddling in elections. There was a panel discussion during the conference in which Nicholas Burns, he's a professor at Harvard and a former American diplomat, and he is sitting there with Sergei Kislyak. He's the former, I think, the former ambassador to the United States. Anyway, he's a bigwig in the Russian administration, first deputy chairman of the Committee on Foreign Affairs and of the Council of Federation, the Russian Federation, former ambassador to the United States of America. Kislyak, you've probably heard his name mentioned before. But anyway, there's this moderator there who's calling him on the carpet saying, look, you've meddled in elections in Germany and other European states and also in the United States. And both sides, Democrats, Republicans, they see it. They know what's going on. As I said on yesterday's program, I mean, it's been going on for decades. It's been going on for the better part of a century. But notice Kislyak's response to kind of being pressed on this matter of meddling. Look at what he says in response about the United States of America. Here's clip 17.
United States is now a country where everybody is almost fighting everybody. The Democrats fighting the Republican White House, the liberal press against the president, and it's your life. It's your fight. And don't bring us into your infights, because we have nothing to do with that. We wanted to have normal relations with you, but we are not going to walk around Washington with extended hands seeking for cooperation. Whenever you finish with this fight, and normalcy will return to internal political life in the United States, we'll keep the doors open.
That's a prominent Russian diplomat saying, look, whenever you finish your internal strife and division, then maybe we'll resume normal relations with you. But it's out there on display. This is the way the world views the United States. Of course, Russia has its hand, as I covered yesterday. That's been their goal from the beginning, to sow discord, divide and conquer. That's the approach. And now there they are, sitting back and just gloating, just smiling over America's misfortune. So much division and strife. And think about, again, think about the way that it's perceived around the world. All of these nations looking at the United States, fighting everyone, as Kislyak said. He's right about that. I mean, how can you deny that? Democrats fighting Republicans, the liberal press against the president. You worry about your own fighting. You worry about your own division before you come after me and blame me or blame my country. That's Russia's response. It's revealing. Go back and listen to that program from yesterday for more on that particular subject. That's, of course, available. All of our podcasts are at thetrumpet.com. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. We'll take a quick break and then come right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Freedom is one of the most sought-after ideals in human history. Man's search for freedom has taken him into the fiercest of protests, struggles, revolutions, civil wars, and even world wars. Today, in the midst of free societies, many continue to fight for what they perceive as ever greater freedoms. And yet, many of these same people are actively fighting against law. Few people understand that this war against law actually undermines true freedom. To learn more, request Gerald Fleury's booklet, No Freedom Without Law. In this free booklet, you will see what the Bible says about the latter-day spirit of rebellion and lawlessness that is now so common in our nations today. Also request America Under Attack. In this booklet, you will learn more about the spirit behind this attack on law. You'll see where this is leading. Both booklets are offered freely at no cost or obligation to you. Request No Freedom Without Law and America Under Attack. Email your request to td@kpcg.fm or visit thetrumpet.com. The Trumpet Daily.
Let us pledge today, ladies and gentlemen, here in Munich, not to repeat the mistakes of the past. Appeasement never works. The hour to prevent war is getting late, but it is not too late. I'm convinced that one day this regime will fall. And when it does, the great peace between the ancient Jewish people and the ancient Persian people will flourish once again. When that happens, the people of Iran will breathe free, and the people in the region and throughout the world will breathe a sigh of relief. But today, we must speak clearly, we must act boldly. We can stop this dangerous regime. We can roll back its aggression, and by doing so, create a more peaceful, a more prosperous, and a more secure world for our region and for our future.
That again is Benjamin Netanyahu sounding the alarm about the King of the South. An excellent speech for sure. Also, a very, well, it's, how prophetic is that? That here is the leader of Israel. I believe this was his first appearance at the Munich Security Conference. Going to Germany, I mean, he was appealing to the world at large, the Western world. But right there in Munich, appealing to Germany and others for help against Iran. He's optimistic. Feels like the Iranian regime is going to fall eventually, and eventually it will. It's going to be brought on by the King of the North coming against the King of the South like a whirlwind. coming to little Judah's aid, it would seem. But that's just before a prophesied double cross. Well, Psalm 83 speaks of the alliance. Those allied with the king of the south, radical Islam, headed up by Iran, and those who are allied with Assyria, modern-day Germany. But some refreshing words from Prime Minister Netanyahu's speech at the security conference. Some truth. In a world that's just consuming one lie after another, appeasement never works, he said. We should have learned that from World War II. But there were so many nations, just like today, that were just convinced that the way to work with Adolf Hitler is to appease him. Winston Churchill, this is back in 1932, he wrote in a piece at the Daily Mail, he said, "The dangers were too acute to be hidden behind bland platitudes. I cannot recall a time," Churchill said, "when the gap between the kind of words which statesmen use and what was actually happening in many countries was so great as it is now." I mean, they were saying one thing when the facts were saying another. The facts on the ground. He said, "The habit of saying smooth things and uttering pious platitudes and sentiments to gain applause without relation to the underlying facts is more pronounced now than it has ever been in my experience." Well, we're seeing it play out again. We're seeing history repeat itself. That's a reference there to Isaiah 30, what Churchill said back in 1932 about smooth things, pious platitudes. If you have your Bible, you can read that along with me. Isaiah chapter 30. First, let me just play you a clip. This is from my father's Key of David program from over 10 years ago, January of 2007. Here's clip one.
But Winston Churchill, now this is recent history, Winston Churchill throughout the 1930s was warning about a man. It wasn't really so much about Germany. He was warning about Adolf Hitler. He said, "Look, this man is a remarkable leader, very evil, but very much a strong leader. And he said, this is going to come up on us fast, and you'd better get prepared for war because he's going to initiate war." And throughout the 30s, he told Britain about it. He told America about it. He told almost everybody in the world. And you know how many people believed him? Almost nobody. I mean, that's recent history. We came within a hair's breadth of being destroyed in World War II. And Winston Churchill kept us from being destroyed at a time when his government wanted to negotiate with Hitler.
His government, like I covered with you yesterday, his government wanted to negotiate with Hitler. The people of Britain wanted to negotiate. They wanted to hear smooth things. The reaction to Neville Chamberlain when he returned from Munich. Another peace conference from back in the late 1930s. And Chamberlain, he returned with a piece of paper saying, "We've made peace! We've made peace!" And the euphoria, the cheering from everyone, except for Churchill and just a couple sitting next to Churchill. They're in Parliament, and people shouting at Churchill, "Get up, stand up, get in on the standing ovation, get in on the cheering. This is a victory for peace." And Churchill just sat there because he knew it was a total surrender. He knew it. Those were the facts. People were turning their ears away from the truth, as Paul prophesied in 2 Timothy, because they wanted to hear fables. They wanted to hear pious platitudes. They wanted to hear sentiments that would gain applause. They didn't want to hear about the facts. Notice what else. This is from a program in 2012. My father said this, clip three.
I want to just mention something to you about Winston Churchill in World War II. Everybody could see how brave he was when he was speaking out during the war. And they felt they praised his bravery, but the most important characteristic he had, they, for the most part, didn't see. Even historians today don't even really see that trait that he had. But what really motivated him and moved him and stirred him is that he saw this looming catastrophe.
He saw it coming. He saw the catastrophe, and so he spoke out about it. Well, this passage in Isaiah 30 talks about the people saying to the prophets, "Prophesy not unto us right things, speak unto us smooth things, prophesy deceits." That's what the people wanted. They wanted to continue on with their pleasures and with the prosperity. They didn't want to face reality. Churchill gave them a heavy dose of reality. And we got some of that from one Israeli leader over the weekend, for sure. Let me just conclude with another snippet from my father's programs. This is from 2009, clip 4.
Now we moved on into the 20th century, and we had two world wars then. And still, men kept talking about the war to end all wars. That's what they said about World War II, but they thought that same thing about World War I. Now we're into the 21st century, and the Bible prophesies a third world war. And right at the end of that, it's going to lead right into the second coming of Jesus Christ. What a future that's going to be.
So there is hope in the end, and we can be thankful to God for that. When we come back, we'll go to the Olympics, the Winter Olympics, with that incredible victory by the Czech Republic's Ester Ledecka. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily.
Don't forget to visit our website at thetrumpet.com. Every day, thetrumpet.com will help you understand your world by analyzing today's headlines under the clear light of Bible prophecy. Log on to thetrumpet.com and sign up for our daily Trumpet Brief email and subscribe to The Trumpet Magazine.
The Trumpet Daily.
By 400ths of a second, the snowboarding skier, the skiing snowboarder, may well get in amongst the medals. That would be an incredible story. What a jump. She's landed. Oh, can she do it? She's done it! Ledecka leads the Olympic Super-G. Surely that's the gold medal. She cannot believe it.
That's the call there from Australian announcers. Ester Ledecka's stunning victory on the Super-G by a hundredth of a second. And the reason I wanted to just bring this up, besides the fact that it's a nice positive ending to some of the heavier news events that we have to discuss so often on this show. But this is from Deadspin, who wrote that Ledecka crossed the finish line of this morning's run of the woman's Super-G, a hundredth of a second ahead. It says, Ledecka, she couldn't believe it. She was shocked. If you saw the footage, she was saying, is there a mistake? Is there a miscalculation? It says here, Ledecka, after all, is best known for her achievements in a completely different event, snowboarding, where she's won two world championships and is a favorite in Pyeongchang. Ledecka wasn't the only one surprised by the outcome. It says, by the time Ledecka finished her miracle run, one, it turns out, she accomplished thanks to her lack of experience in the event, leading her to take a faster but unorthodox line on the course. So she refuses to just be confined to snowboarding. She wanted to do the Super-G as well, and she approached it, I guess, bringing some of her snowboarding experience into it, approaching it in a way that was somewhat unorthodox. And she dominated. she was a little shaky on that final jump, but as you heard from the announcer, she pulled it off. And she grabbed the gold medal. This is from NPR. It talks about her story. Further on, it says she's refused to specialize in one sport, and so she stayed with this, it says. It says, as for how she won, an elated Ledecka said in a transcription from the Olympics news service, I really don't know what happened. Further on in this piece, it says, for a sense of the magnitude of this upset, consider that ahead of the Olympics, Ledecka had been ranked 43rd in the Super G and 68th overall on the Alpine skiing rankings. Before today, Ledecka had never stood on a podium for international level Alpine skiing. It says the Czech Olympic team is calling it the miracle on snow, echoing the miracle on ice of 1980 when the U.S. ice hockey team beat Russia. There's another story, I don't have time to get into it, that it talks about how she borrowed skis just to compete in this competition. She was seen as no way of winning, and so much so that NBC cut away after the world champion got the best time, and then there was just the scrubs left. And, well, she was in the scrubs that came around and later shocked the whole world. Pretty amazing story. You can probably find a little bit more on that with some Google searches. That's all, though, that we have time for on today's program. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Thank you for joining us today, and we'll see you tomorrow.